You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Can only come from you. Ghetto people, yeah.
What are you gonna
are you gonna do?
Do you really think that?
Do you think it all?
Yeah. Our government cares about
they
you.
They ain't giving get up a second thought about you, no. Ghetto people.
Who you gonna turn to next?
Tell
ghetto
me.
People.
You gotta take a look at yourself, yeah. Ghetto people. With your life
running like a red disease,
running like a red disease. Ghetto people,
stop giving up yourself.
Stop doing what you're doing to yourself, young. You got to learn to love yourself. Ghetto people.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything that on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned
this
Kemet
call may
in the
be recorded
opening.
Or transcribed.
Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture, but there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement, Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted. And we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, hope everything is well for you today. I hope you had a great weekend, a safe weekend, a good weekend, and I hope you had a chance to do all the things you want to do, should do, need do, must do, can do, and will do. And I hope the weather was accommodating for you to do it. But of course, if it wasn't and it had to get done, it must be done, you will get it done and you'll do it safely. That's why we appreciate you and we love you. Keep on doing your thing. This is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. At the top of the page, you'll see podcast. Click on that. The drop down, you'll see African Perspectives. Click on that, and there will be programs that are dated and titled. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening Media, Mondays from 6 to 8, all times are going to give our Eastern times. Acres of Diamonds, public affairs programming, Brother Jihad Ahmed, Acres of Diamonds. And then from 8 to 9, Black Therapy Central with Dr. Mawia Kambon and Nataki Kambon. And then at 9 p.m., from 9 to 10, Conversation Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey of Encobra. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. On Wednesdays, the Black Farmers Report from 8 to 9 on Wednesdays. If it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, it's time for an awakening, brothers and sisters, with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard at 8 p.m. Saturday from 4 to 6, Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers. And then from 7 to 9, the Sankofa Elders Council. And Sunday at 7 p.m., once again, it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We Buy Black. We Buy Black, the largest online marketplace for American and African-owned businesses, is WeBuyBlack.com. Get everything you need from American and African-owned businesses from WeBuyBlack.com. And, of course, if you spend enough money, buy enough products, free delivery. So go check out the website, WeBuyBlack.com. Africa for the Africans. Africa for the Africans. Brother Bomani Tayemba has been taking our people to the motherland for many years. Well over 400-some people he has taken. He has helped him to have a journey of a lifetime. Brothers and sisters, he has a trip upcoming November 18th through the 29th to Tanzania. I know some people announce it Tanzania, from November 18th through the 29th. And then December 24th to January 5th, 2022, to Ghana. And then April 1st to April 11th to Senegal and Gambia. And then May 24th to June 5th, once again to Ghana. All trips are $3,700. Put a $400 deposit down.
and pay on it as you can continue to do that. And you will be ready for a trip of a lifetime. Brothers and sisters, everything is on the website. Go to AfricaForTheAfricans.org. All the information that you need, all of the information about shots and visas and so forth is right there on the website. Also, too many pictures. But if you want to see a good number of pictures, go to Facebook.com/Bomani. If you want to see videos of previous tours, go to YouTube.com/Bomani2007. All right, Baba Rinoco is in Kemet, and he'll be there from, he got there Saturday, the 34th. He left Saturday, and he'll be there till the 13th. Friday the 13th, we'll be talking to my good brother Rinoco Rashidi from Kemet. And believe me, you should go to his website. That's Dr. D. R-R-U-N-O-K-O, drrinoco.com. Go to drrinoco.com, and on the website you'll see, as you continue to look at it, the tour, the annual tour to Kemet, and you see beautiful pictures and what they're going to do there, Hawaii itinerary. Okay? drrinoco.com. Habashah. Habashah Incorporated. .org. Habashah stands for Helping Africa by Establishing Schools at Home and Abroad. HabashahIncorporated.org. Brothers and sisters, they're doing the work. Support them. Support them by being a part of some of the things that they're doing, like Habashah Works Program, Black to Our Roots, Sustainable Seeds, Golden Growers, and the Urban Green Jobs. Of course, the Kashi Project, which needs our support in Africa. And then you'll see the buildings that they're doing and all kinds of good stuff. HabashahIncorporated.org. Give them your support. The LEDGE program. LEDGE stands for the Environmental Development of Group Economics. The land for the Environmental Development of Group Economics. LEDGE. Become a member of the LEDGE. They deal in the four areas of human existence and growth, which is food, water, clothing, and shelter. Food, water, clothing, and shelter. They have 12 projects in six different countries with over 170 employed and over 260 members. Become a member of LEDGE, the LEDGE group. If you become a member of the LEDGE in Tanzania, you have the opportunity to buy land. That's right. You have an opportunity to buy land in Tanzania for $250 an acre. Check out the LEDGE group. .com. I can't pull up Bibi Atumi for some reason, but of course we support Bibi Atumi. We advocate that you get Bibi Atumi. Let that be your browser. Let that be something that you go to for information and so forth. Bibi Atumi, A-B-I-B-I-T-U-M-I.com. BibiAtumi.com. Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar, located in the West End here in Atlanta. I was there this past weekend. And they were busy. It was good. That's good. It was a hot day Saturday. And had a lot of good business and so forth. And it's really expanding. It's really great to see what they have done at Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar. I remember when they first opened. See, that's the thing about it. They first opened, they continued to grow. Unfortunately, our cafe did not happen because, one of the things, is obviously, it's location. Wadada's right in the West End, right on Ralph David Abernathy. You know, we were kind of off, over on Sylvan Road, kind of off the beaten path, so to speak. You really had to want to go there. Sometimes you can just pass by a place. Oh, let me stop and get me a smoothie or whatever, But right on for the Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar. The Black Dot Cultural Center and bookstore located in Lithonia, Brother Gazemdi Ajamu. Please give my good brother a call at 404-519-8107. He's located in the West End. Delicious coffee bar he has, serving delicious African coffees and teas and so forth. So that's the Black Dot Cultural Center and bookstore. There is light in the Black Dot. Mama Nia, I went to visit her too recently to see how she's doing. She's doing well. She's about to have things happen at their new location. And of course, when she does, I'll be there to do a presentation. I look forward to it. Believe me, I do. But if you want to give Mama Nia a call, find out if she has the books that you want. And if she doesn't, believe me, she'll get them. And that is 404-346-3263. 404-346-3263. The Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. Us lifting us to economic development cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa. Cooperative economics, or as we like to say, family-centered economics. The Thursday night broadcast every Thursday night at 9 p.m. from 9 to 10 on Blog Talk Radio. That's blogtalkradio.com/ULU. The name of the program is Dare to Win. That's every Thursday night from 9 to 10. If you want to listen by phone, you can, or you can call in to give a question, comment, or concern. Just dial 929-477-2789. That's 929-477-2789. Us lifting us. Sun Goddess Sense. Sun Goddess Sense, your one-stop natural shop. Located at 4140 Jonesboro Road in Forest Park, Georgia, inside the International Discount Mall, booth 225. That's right. Sun Goddess Sense, your one-stop natural shop. Give my sister a call, Shelly Amonset, at 404-434-7963. That's 404-434-7963. Sun Goddess Sense, your one-stop natural shop. Sanjay Dash Aiti. My good sister, Gabby Aurelia, who is doing outstanding work in the northeastern portion of the island of Haiti. Brothers and sisters, she definitely deserves to be supported. She's doing work with children in school. They have an educational program, health program, sustainable agriculture, and entrepreneurship. Go to Sanjay, S-O-N-J-E dash, Haiti, AYITI.org. Sanjay-Haiti.org. Also, too, the Shrine of the Black Madonna, which is located right down the street from the Wadadas, right on Ralph David Abernathy. And they have the Marcus Garvey Commemoration Festival, working with the UNIA, Universal Negro Improvement Association, Division 421 here in Atlanta. And that's going to be Saturday, August 14th. Of course, Marcus Garvey's birthday is the 17th of August. And there will be from noon to 6, drummers, market. If, you know, the vendor spaces or slots are going fast. So give them a call at 404-254-5122. That's 404-254-5122. Marcus Garvey. There's a lot of good things happening in August. Well, the number one, of course, is Marcus Garvey's birthday. And the Haitian Revolution. All kinds of good stuff that is happening. And, of course, the Jamma Jam. The old Jamma Jam is still happening, brothers and sisters. Empower your body, mind, and spirit. Build your community. Celebrate Black August by participating in Jamma Jam's featuring a Black August bike ride and a 5K run. The Jamma Jam is a month-long wellness effort, and events are designed to promote health and well-being for all ages. Our goal is not only to raise funds for the Kimbunga Bulezi Rites of Passage program, which, of course, I'm one of the members of Ubunga Blazy, and along with some other elders, to be the guides for these young men, but also to encourage families to have fun while engaging in physical activity. Our challenge to ourselves is to improve health and to drive tangible and positive change through intentional youth programs and community building. The Jamma Jam is a community-focused event open to participants of all ages. We believe that fitness should be a way of life, not a list of goals to achieve. And that's why our event is open to everyone, not just athletes or extremely fit individuals. It's open to everyone. All right. you jamma jamma. I'm going to be promoting that. And get Sister Miriam and Brother Damani Aquil back on the line to make sure we have all the details. Ackerman Institute. Ackerman Institute. Brothers and sisters, as you know, we definitely support Ackerman Institute and the work that Baba Baruti is doing. In fact, he has an online educational program, and that program, believe me, brothers and sisters, that online program okay, there it is. African-centered online homeschool tutorial program by the Ackerman Institute. It is open for students from the 4th through the 12th grades. And it starts, let me see here. Got to get that right. It's for the academic year of this year to the 2022, but I think it starts in August. Well, this is August. The school starts. They meet through Zoom, and so you should contact Mama Ya Baruti or Baba Baruti at 404-753-7237. Email, you can put yabaruti at yahoo.com or mmamwalimubaruti at yahoo or on Facebook, Ackerman Institute. Okay? And it starts August 9th. It's right there. I'm looking for the body is on around here. It starts August 9th, brothers and sisters. All right. Of course, this Saturday is the quarterly men's with Baba Baruti. The title is Chess or Checkers, A Question of Power. Chess or Checkers, A Question of Power. And it's $10 for warriors and $5 for warrior training. And you pay that way through PayPal. Either you can use PayPal, YaBaruti at Yahoo, or Cash App, the dollar sign, Ya, the letter M, Baruti. Including an information, Chess or Checkers, and your name and your email address so where they can send the link to. That is this Saturday. And also this Saturday, Mama Ya, quarterly sister circle, the sister circle, and that's happening this Saturday. Same thing. Put in information this Saturday. Mama Ya's is from 4 to 6. Baba Baruti's from 12 to 2. And it's $10 once again and $5 for the teens and providing that information. Okay. All right. And let me see what else I got for the Barutis. Okay. Centered Building African Realities, a 5-week course taught by Baba Baruti every Wednesday at 7:30 from 7:30 to 9 p.m. every Wednesday, beginning August 11th to September 8th. Beginning August 11th to September 8th. And it's $10 per class or $45 for the entire course. $10 per class, $45 every Wednesday from 7:30. And then once again, PayPal and Cash App included centered course, your name, your email address, so they can send you where they can send the link to. Centered. And we must be centered. And of course, Ackerman House is where you can buy books by Baba Baruti. Once again, he is a prolific writer, as you know. And we support Baba Baruti in his efforts. All right. Okay. The Enye Sesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. The Enye Sesim. August 1st. Can't we Africans have at least one thing for us without Urugu being there? Happiness is a vital component of good health and sanity. But happiness can't become difficult to come by, though definitely not impossible. When your enjoyment of life is constantly spoiled by the presence of the calculating smiles and invasive thieves, liars, rapists, and murderers, and cultural bandits. It is not possible for warriors to be happy sharing the company of sworn enemies, especially at events and activities which they consider sacred to their own. Too often we forget that peaceful strategies of war can be more effective than that openly violent ones. The supplemental defeat that comes at the hands and in the beds of the enemy up close and personal is lost in the glow of false approval and pursuit of love. Knowing full well what a great pretender Yerugu is, we would have to be menticidally foolish to not conclude that through deception is the most gratifying, no matter the form it comes in. Demons always seek victory in stealing the joy of those they seek to drive insane and destroy. So just as Yerugu gains immeasurable pleasure from creating the environment, situations, and media that bring a stress and disease and kills our lives, they know that our misdirected anger and miserable sadness contributes to the possibility of victory for them. For warriors, this stress and misery is compounded by their proximity, by having to see, hear, and smell them, touch and taste being completely out of the question. If every awakened African is to be happy, Yerugu must be removed from everything we do. If every awakened African is to be happy, Yerugu must be removed from everything we do. Affirm, enemies do not enter my space. Affirm, enemies do not enter my space. August 2nd, Africans in the diaspora have mostly functioned as survival units instead of developmentally powering families and communities. Being broken and in survival mode moves us further away from sovereignty. What is needed to move us towards sovereignty is our families and our communities, is a total understanding of where we currently are. A true understanding of European colonization and white nationalist movement is the only way to protect our psyche from the deterioration of a European agenda. In order for African families to continue the re-Africanization and nation-building process, families must teach African children to reject racism and white supremacy in every area of human existence. Sovereignty can only be obtained through strong, self-sustaining families and community. I repeat, sovereignty can only be obtained through strong, self-sustaining families and communities. In Nzinga Afua, chaos is growing all around us, but we are almost completely distracted from what can be done to remove it because we focus on individual survival. Instead of cleansing the air in our spaces, we are putting the bulk of our energies into trying to figure out better ways to breathe within this pollution we know to be hell. We know that this cannot change, but instead of looking to who we are and have always been for vital solutions to the racism that the aspirations to white supremacy must create, enforce, and honor in order to be, we seek to find a way out while staying within their deteriorating agenda. Because our psyches have been weakened from being survival units for so long, and the commitment, work, and difficulty involved in breaking from that, we cannot see the obvious. We cannot be ourselves without sovereignty, and sovereignty requires that we first uncompromisingly strengthen our families. I repeat, we cannot be ourselves without sovereignty, and sovereignty requires that we first uncompromisingly strengthen our families. Affirm, I am re-Africanizing. Affirm, I am re-Africanizing. I am re-Africanizing myself, my mind, my body. Which one do I want to go to? Let me do this first. Okay, I'll do this first. Yeah. This was said, you know, I read these periodically, and I
think it's important to do that. This was said by Lord Macaulay as he addressed the British Parliament on February 2nd of 1835. I have traveled across the length and breadth of Africa, and I have not seen one person who is a beggar, who is a thief. Such wealth I have seen in these countries, such high moral values, people of such caliber, that I do not think we can ever conquer this country unless we break the very backbone of this nation, which is their spiritual and cultural heritage. And therefore, I propose that we replace her old and ancient educational system, her culture. For if the Africans think that all that is foreign and British is good and greater than their own, they will lose their self-esteem, their culture, their native culture, and they will become what we want them, a totally dominated nation. I tell you, ain't it? Yeah. Okay, where am I at here? Okay. This is what Kwame Nkrumah said at the Speech of Freedom in 1961, being the first country on the continent to break from colonial rule in 1957. He said, I believe strongly and sincerely that with deep-rooted wisdom and dignity, the innate respect for human lives, the intense humanity that is our heritage, the African culture united under one federal government will emerge not just as another world block to flaunt its wealth and strength, but as a great power whose greatness is indestructible because it is built not on fear, envy, and suspicion, nor won at the expense of others, but founded on hope, trust, friendship, and directed to the good of all mankind. He said this sometime later. If we do not approach the problems in Africa with a common front and a common purpose, we shall be haggling and wrangling amongst ourselves until we have been colonized again and become the trolls of a far greater colonialism than we had suffered heretofore. You know, when you see these, when you hear these words and you see what's happened, and you understand how I was going to say prophetic, but how pathetic it is. To be truly liberated, African people must come to know the nature of European thought and behavior. In order for us to understand the effect that the European has had on our ability to think victoriously, we must be able to separate our thoughts from Europeans' thoughts, so to visualize a future that is not dominated by Europe. This is demanded by an African-centered worldview, because why? We are Africans, and because the future to which the European leads us is genocide. Marimba Ani. That's a fact. It's an ugly fact that we're afraid of, you know? Genocide. Yeah. And there is no other historical instance of a formerly captive or enslaved people who valued integration with their former captors to the point they were completely abandoned the superior wealth of their own homeland. Brother Ezra Erahon, there is no other historical instance of a formerly enslaved people who value integration, who wanted to be just like their captors, who've been so overwhelmed that they can't think, that the vice grip is so damn tight on their damn minds that they can't think outside of the imposed boundaries that Europeans have placed upon them, where they completely abandon the superior wealth of their own homeland. Man, I saw this on WhatsApp. And it was from Mama Nubuntu. I believe it's from Mama Nubuntu. Profound distinctions between intelligence and wisdom. Profound distinctions between intelligence and wisdom. Intelligence leads to arguments. Wisdom leads to settlements. Intelligence is power of will. Wisdom is power over will. Intelligence is heat, it burns. Wisdom is warmth, it comforts. Intelligence is pursuit of knowledge, it tires the seeker. Wisdom is pursuit of truth, it inspires the seeker. Intelligence is holding on, wisdom is letting go. Intelligence leads you, wisdom guides you. An intelligent man thinks he knows everything. A wise man knows that there is still something to learn. An intelligent man always tries to prove his point. A wise man knows there really is no point to prove. An intelligent man freely gives unsolicited advice. A wise man keeps his counsel until all options are considered. An intelligent man understands what is being said. A wise man understands what is left unsaid. An intelligent man speaks when he has something to say. A wise man speaks when he has something. A wise man speaks when he has something to say. An intelligent man sees everything as relative. A wise man sees everything as related. An intelligent man tries to control the mass flow. A wise man navigates the mass flow. An intelligent man preaches. A wise man reaches. Intelligence is good, but wisdom achieves better results. We must continue to grow in wisdom. Ashe. Ashe. Continue to grow in wisdom. I'm going to talk today, because I've heard this so many times. I know you probably have too. In fact, I can't get out of my mind, once again, being at the firehouse, at the table. You know, they always try to discourage political talk. You know, they didn't want you to, you know, have any political talk. But everything around you, even the fact of how I got my job on the Milwaukee Fire Department through affirmative action is political. Everything is political. And I think we were talking about slavery, and officer said, well, your people sold your people into slavery. Your people sold your people into slavery. You know, and I remember when I came on in 1976, Roots came out. You know, and of course they had Catchers. If you remember the scene when young Kunta was out with the other brothers and they corralled him and kidnapped him, you know. And of course they said that our people, Europeans, could not go into the interior and go get Africans. I disagree. Yes, I know there were collaborators. I know there were traders. I know there were people that was, but not on a whole scale as if and what they want you to believe. Because by believing that, you absolve them of the horror which they have put us through. And not just them, the others as well. So we're going to talk today about, did we sell our people into captivity? We did not. But we've always been led to believe that we did. And because of that, that's another reason of division within our people, a belief that, you know, I look at us as African people. I don't look at tribes or any divisions of African people. That's just like somebody asked me, well, do you know, you know, did you go through AfricanAncestry.com or Ancestry.com or any other to find out exactly where, you know, I don't know. And no, I didn't, and I don't care. I know my mama. I know she's African. That's undeniable. You know? Don't know my father. Very light-skinned man. With good hair. He was an entertainer. My mother would visit him, or he'd come to town. He's out of Chicago. He was from Chicago. He was a ventriloquist, being on that circuit, you know. And then those things happen, and here I am. But there's something in me, even back when I was young, starting to embrace being African, being black. I embrace Malcolm more than I embrace Martin. Respect for Martin. Can remember exactly, well, I remember when Malcolm was killed, February 21st, 1965. I'm in the car with my auntie from Chicago with my mother, and heard it on the radio that afternoon. Must have been early evening, because I remember it was light being, because, you know, it was light still outside, and so it had to be like 4 o'clock, 3 o'clock, something like that. And he was killed earlier that day, around noon, 1 o'clock Eastern time. And then, of course, went to some Black Panther meetings, Republic of New Africa meetings, the NAACP Youth Council, which was very progressive at that time. You know, we had open housing marches. Went to one that went across the dividing line in Milwaukee, which is a viaduct that separates North from South. And believe me, they did not want nobody that looked like us on the South side of Milwaukee at that time. And there were none. There were none. They are now, of course. And, of course, we were met as we crossed the viaduct, across that bridge, met by bricks and stones and bottles. Then the last march I participated, not the last march, but in that time, was the big open housing march that went down Wisconsin Avenue, which is the main street downtown Wisconsin, downtown Milwaukee. Yeah. Black soul blacks deconstructing a lie. When a nation is invaded, there are always three categories. There's always three categories to respond to the invader. There are those who insist. There are those who resist to the end. There are those who collaborate with force because they have no other choice. And there are traitors who cooperate willingly with the enemy. Below you can see the image of Marshall Petain. Petain, who led France. And you see him shaking hands with Adolf Hitler. And they had invaded France after 8 months of war. Only 8 months. France, under Petain, collaborated with Germany and delivered its citizens to the Third Reich. Jews, European Jews especially, were being carried away in wagons of the French railroad company, SNCF. But we have never heard that the French are responsible for the Shoah. Shoah, that's the Yiddish word for the Holocaust. Holocaust is an English word. Holocaust is an act so morally demonstrative that it's not just against the people themselves, but against all humanity. So everybody has a Holocaust. But the European Jew has monopolized that word. So when you hear the word Holocaust, you automatically visualize European Jews. That's why I'm saying words are so important. You automatically think of European Jews. But you never hear of whites delivering whites. Whites selling out whites, you know? Europeans selling Europeans into captivity. When an event like this happens, the story always told by paralleling the three groups of people compared to their reactions. In the case of Africans during European captivity, it is their slave, but it is as if there were only traitors. One does not even embarrass himself to call them traitors, because you know it is normal for Africans to sell other Africans, and since the dawn of time, that is what is believed, isn't it? The Italian head of state, Benito Mussolini, worked with Hitler at the beginning of the latter part of the war. The Spanish head of state, Franco, was a passive ally of Hitler. Of all the major European nations, the only one who resisted until the end was Britain, with Winston Churchill. Ugh, yuck. And this is due partly to its geography and the situation in isolation. Of course, it's an island. It was difficult to take over Britain. The whole of Europe had collaborated with Hitler, but today especially, they mentioned that Hitler is responsible for the show of the European Jews and 50 million deaths. Europeans overwhelmingly captured other Europeans in order to sell them to the Arabs for centuries, with Venice as a transit. We never heard that Caucasians sold Caucasians to the Arabs. The Europeans had Native American scouts during the conquest of America, but we never seen anywhere written that Native Americans exterminated Native Americans. During the war in Algeria, Algerians called Harshiks fought in the French army against their own country. We never heard that Arabs and Berbers are responsible for colonial genocide in Algeria. Throughout history, there has always been traitors. And we, unfortunately, did not escape the rule during the European slave trade. The difference in our case is not one speaks of resistance. No one talks about the Somalians, the Kenyans, the Tanzanians, the Mozambicans, who delivered a death blow resistance for nearly a century against the Portuguese, city by city, street by street, who saw one of their kings being decapitated and their wealthy states destroyed with cannons. No one speaks of the 40 years of resistance of Queen Nzinga, who managed to contain the European force in Angola. No one speaks of King Umbia, letters which claimed to body and cries to stop trafficking. No one talks about Babu Bansu of Ghana, who obviously killed Dutch slave traders before being beheaded by Europeans. No one talks about King Ame of Senegambia, who swore to kill and massacre all slavers on its soil. No one speaks of them and other Mandingos who allied to fight against Europeans, etc. No, the world have only kept the memory that when the Europeans arrived in Africa, they found good, wild kings who put men and women and children on the coast with a sign that said, "For sale." One may wonder why, how they managed to stick us to death and kidnapping of 400 million of ours. The fact is that we are not considered humans. It's been 500 years since we went out of humanity, that Europe has downgraded us to the rank of animals. Therefore, all that is impossible to say about other people is acceptable for us. Civilizers of humanity turn animals since 500 years. Damn. Something must therefore be clear to everyone. In any situation of aggression, the main responsible is the sponsor. We have led resistance in abundance throughout the continent, and we should stop saying that we are responsible for the slave trade. Finally, only we as Africans on both sides of this Atlantic and victims have a right to write our own past, because has said by Mama Miriam Makeba. Do not expect that the people who came to invade us write the truth about us. Say. P.S. There were 150,000 Jews in Hitler's army, but no one in this world would ever say that the Jews are responsible for their Holocaust. Hotep. There's all kinds of information about collaboration and so forth about the European Jews. All kinds. We're going to get ready to take a break. When we come back from the break, we'll talk more about, and give me your opinion, give me your feedback, give me what you think. Did Africans sell Africans into captivity? Brothers and sisters, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back. You stay with us.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Donald Byrd and the Blackbirds, Flight Time. Other programming that we have here on Time for an Awakening on Mondays from 6 to 8 p.m. this evening, Acres of Diamonds with Public Affairs Programming out of Philadelphia with Bajad Ahmed. And that's followed from 8 to 9, 8 p.m. to 9 p.m., Black Therapy Central with Dr. Mawia Kamban and Nataki Kamban. And then from 9 to 10, Conversation, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey of Encobra. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10 on Tuesdays. On Wednesdays, the Black Farmers Report from 8 to 9 on Wednesdays. If it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, it's Time for an Awakening, brothers and sisters, with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Time for an Awakening at 8 p.m. And then on Saturdays, from 4 to 6, Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers. And then from 7 to 9, the Sankofa Elders Council. And then on Sunday, once again at 7 p.m., it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And the number to call is 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. Back to the discussion. You can join this discussion, of course, by dialing 215-490-9832 and give us your African perspective. We're talking today, did our people sell our people into captivity? Was there some complicity? Of course there were. But it is led to believe that it was rampant, that, you know, hey, it's like the first piece I read, they gathered us all up, put a sign on the out on the western shore of Africa and Sierra Leone and Senegal and Ghana and, you know, Nigeria. Africans for sale. Come get some. Africans sold their own people as slaves. Really? Really? Yeah. And this is a serious subject, you know, and not being the most learned individual, I do what I can, but I'm going to give this to you, but to me it deserves more information. And it's not as important as if we sold ourselves, into captivity to Europeans, or if Arabs did it, or whoever else did it. The bottom line is where we are now, where we are right now, and what needs to happen with us on the continent and in the diaspora of Africans coming together. That is what's most and vitally important. But it helps when you understand the context, when it helps when you understand how this evolved and why it's still happening with us today, where we cannot see each other as brothers and sisters, where we cannot put our hand out and grab the hand of the other brother and sister to be one and to deal with this madness, and to deal with the Urugu, and to deal with who and what he is, the evilness that he has done. Africans sold their own people is a stock argument that Caucasians use when the subject of slavery comes up. First, simply as an argument of fact, it fails. Africans were not a country. Africans were not selling their own. They were selling their enemies, just as Greeks and Romans once did. Africa then as now was made up of different countries. There are no more selling their own than, say, Europeans were selling their own during the so-called Holocaust, the European Holocaust. And it overlooks a few other things. Most African countries did not sell captives or slaves, and some even fought against it. But because Europeans back then could control the supply of because of guns, there were little Africans could do to stop it. The transatlantic slave trade was as much a greater scale than anything the Africans or anyone else ever did in the history of slavery. It is the most, I mean, the, you know, the reality of people being put into captivity to other people, just a fact of history. But nothing on the scale what Europeans did to Africans. Nothing on that scale. The transatlantic slave trade was on a much greater scale than anything the Africans or anyone else ever did in the history of slavery. Countries were destroyed and millions of lives wasted. Millions died. Over 12 million were sold in less than 400 years, something so huge that it changed the genetic map of the world. The transatlantic slave trade was racist. The African slave trade, for all of its other ills, was not that. Neither was the Greek or Roman slave trade. So slavery in places like Haiti, Barbados, and the Americas was much more cruel. As a moral argument, it fails. It used what I call the Arab trade argument. It excuses the evil of one's own past by finding the same sort of evil done by others. Whites sold slaves, but Africans and Arab traders did too, which, morally speaking, is at the same level as an 8-year-old saying, "He did it too," when caught doing something bad. Well, we do not accept this argument from eight-year-olds, nor from bank robbers or wife beaters. "Africa did it too" is no better. But it is as derailing argument that it comes into its own. Its main purpose is to draw attention away from what whites did by turning the tables. The part of their past makes whites uncomfortable. But instead of facing up to it, they have built up defenses against it. Africans sold their own people as slaves. Africans are still selling slaves. Arab traders sold slaves too. African slavery goes back thousands of years. All races have practiced slavery. Whites stopped slavery. "My family never owned slaves." That was ancient history. You're living in the past. Get over it. It was the time. Slavery did not make economic sense. Whites got to where they are by their own hard work. Blacks are better off in America than in Africa, so you should be thanking us for slavery, because Africans were savages. And on and on and on. Why not just face up to it? Because part of their sense of self-worth is built on being white, and how whites are better than everyone else, particularly blacks. But it is a huge lie, a lie that can only be maintained by not looking at their past and present squarely and honestly. Africans in the diaspora have the challenge of rewriting history that has been stained by years of distortions, omissions, and downright lies. One of the biggest challenges of rewriting this history has been the Atlantic slave trade. And one of the biggest sore points has been the idea that blacks, Africans, sold their own people into slavery. A lack of information and a paucity of expensive scholarship and an unwillingness to have a serious discourse on colorism as it exists in Africa even before European intervention has contributed to this. Diasporan Africans are often quite naive and will do anything to hold fast to the illusion that we are all Africans and ignore that racism that has existed among a group that is far from uniform. I wish we were. In looking at the issue of colorism, I could not help seeing the links between the role of Islam in Africa and the role of Africans in the slave trade. The book Islam and the Ideology of Slavery by John Ralph Willis is very helpful in looking at the almost imperceivable link between the enslavement of Africans and non-Muslims or infidels, and the belief that black Africans were not only heathens, but inherently inferior. This is not a new thought, and certainly not one that originated with the Muslims coming into Africa. Several Jewish texts have their own vestiges and versions of the mythical curse of Ham being blackness. Given the common origins of these two major religions, it is thus not surprising that both European Jews and Muslims play some of the most important roles in the enslavement of Africans next to the Europeans. In an article by Oscar Breed, consultant in African studies, called "Did We Sell Each Other into Slavery?" he says, even the case at Tipu Tip, and I looked up Tipu Tip, and they said he was supposed to be mulatto. There ain't no damn way that man is mulatto. It's just like Bashir of Sudan, who professed to be an Arab. And if Bashir of the Sudan didn't open his mouth, he'd just be like any other African in the way he looked. It's the same thing with Tipu Tip. Tipu Tip may well fall into a category that we might call the consequences of forced cultural assimilation via white or red Arab conquest over Africa. Tipu Tip's father was if his father was Caucasian or Arab, then his father was not anywhere damn it near being light or white. Because I know Arabs consider themselves white. Arabs, like I'm saying, when I read that about Bashir of the Sudan, Northern Sudan, I was like, these cats are delusional. That's what white supremacy does. That's what white supremacy does. It's totally a mess up of your mind. And a slave raider, his mother was an unmixed African woman, and that's obvious because he's deeply African, his nose, his face, his skin color. Tip was born out of violence, the rape of an African woman. It is said that Tip, a mulatto, and that's in quotes, was merciless to Africans, and I could see that. The story of Tipu Tip, who is one of the most widely known slave traders, has always posed a problem for historians, especially African-centered historians in the diaspora, trying to find some way to reconcile themselves to the idea of an African slave trader. The fact that Tipu Tip was not only Muslim, but mulatto, and once again in quote, is vital. The common ideology of Judaism and Islam, where black Africans are concerned, is certainly no secret. While in some Islamic writings we see an almost mythical reverence for Africans, especially in over-sexualized concept of Ethiopian women, an over-sexualized concept of the Ethiopian women who were preferred concubines of many wealthy Arab traders and kings, in others there is distinct racism. Add to this the religious fervor of the Muslim invaders, their non-acceptance a regard for traditional African religions, and the obvious economic and political desire for which religion was used as a tool, and we get an excellent but little spoken picture of Islam in Africa. Historians did not often record or even think of ethnicity of these Africans who sold their brothers and sisters into slavery. As part of their distorted historical legacy, we too in the diaspora buy the idea that all Africans were uniform and brothers, but the true picture, especially at the time, was not so. Centuries of contact with Europeans, Asians, North Africans produced several color class distinctions on the continent, divisions fostered by foreigners. This may have been especially prominent in urban and economic centers. When we combine the converting military force of Islam sweeping across the West from East Africa, placing a virtual economic stronghold on villages and trading centers that were African, with the intermixing of light-skinned Muslim traders from the North and East Africans, creating an unprecedented population of mixed light-skinned Africans who began to form the elites of trading classes, we can see how a society begins to change. Some historians have tended to downplay or completely ignore the potential for change in scenario. It has been suggested that one cannot transplant a modern-day problem outside of its historical context. However, we see this creeping problem of colorism occurring all over the continent. In the Portuguese colonies of Angola and Mozambique, where European traders and administrators were encouraged to intermarry, the elitist trader class was largely mulatto and Catholic. If we look at the situation in Ethiopia with the age-old oppression of the original Ethiopians, the Oromon of indigenous Kushite stock by the more Arabized, this too has been its roots in color prejudice. There were hints of this occurring in many other instances at critical points of contact between indigenous Africans and light-skinned foreigners or mixed Africans, and the most significant of these were in the areas of severe Islamic incursion. That's why you heard Minister Farrakhan talk about, yeah, you should have the hair on your head, but it should be like your eyebrows. And you know, Saru Seti, you know, even though he can be a little vulgar, shit, not a little vulgar, but anyway, he's the one that pointed out that Minister Farrakhan is the enemy of the African people. And that was profound. I mean, the words were there by him, and the words were there by him vocally, and the words were there by Minister Elijah Muhammad in paper. You know? And so this idea that Islam is somehow encompassing of African people, when the so-called Arabs who practice Islam have a disdain for African people. In fact, the world has a disdain for African people, not just because of what Islam has done, of course not, but because of what Europeans have done. All three of these religions have challenged the Africanness of Africans, the blackness. All three. The Ham story. The Christians. The Muslims. All have an adversity to African people, to dark-skinned people, to black people. Many towns and villages converted to Islam because of the protection that the military banner of Islam could offer them in a changing economic, political, and social landscape. But the more damaging result was the many light-skinned, converted Africans, children of mixed encounters, that now felt a sense of superiority over their dark-skinned African counterparts or brothers and sisters. Colorism is indeed an ancient vestige. The truth of the matter is that fair-skinned Arabs' racist attitudes toward blacks existed even before they invaded Africa. The evidence of this can be found in how they dealt with African inhabitants of southern Arabia before they entered Africa as Muslims. Discerning readers and thinkers can look at this and many other accounts of this and get a clear picture of the inherent racism of this situation. When we combine this with the desire for African slave labor by Europeans, it was one large feat for those often lighter-skinned Islamized Africans to enslave the black Africans, whom they barely endowed with a shred of humanity. And of course, jumping on their bandwagon would have been those black Africans with deep inferiority complexes who would have been only too eager to do the duty of the superior Muslims in an effort to advance themselves. These facts are certainly not hidden, and the patterns are everywhere, even today. But it is who do we not like to see? For centuries, we certainly have been conditioned for sight. We not like to see. This leads us to another direct way colorism played itself out in the slave trade. And this is the type of Africans who were enslaved. The biggest victims of slavery were undoubtedly the darkest Africans, of which were called Negroid type. If you look at old maps and documents by early European explorers, you can note that the parts of the continent that they explored was divided by their cruel definitions of what they saw as different African ethnicities. The region of the West and Central Africa were seen as the place of the Negroes, which was distinct from Ethiopian Africans, and even more so, the lighter, more Arabized Northern Africans. We cannot say that no Africans were taken from the North, but by and large, most captives were taken, and they came from the and taken to the West Indies, Americas, etc., were the type of Negroid Africans. Beard continues. In reality, slavery is a human institution. Every ethnic group has sold members of the same ethnic group into slavery. It becomes the kind of racism that, while all ethnic groups have sold its own ethnic group into slavery, blacks can't do it. When Eastern Europeans fought each other, it is not called tribalism. Ethnic cleansing is intended to make what is happening to sound more sanctuary. What it really is is white tribalism, pure and simple, white tribalism. But the one thing that this thing we call slavery never was a uniform institution. When people spoke of slavery, they immediately think of chattel slavery as a practice as a result of the Atlantic slave trade. And to apply this definition to indigenous African servitude systems, which bore little or no resemblance to chattel slavery, is misleading to say. Each ethnic group has sold members of the same ethnic group into slavery. It becomes a kind of racism that, while all ethnic groups have sold its own ethnic group into slavery, blacks cannot do it. As it denies the complexities of that peculiar colony, chattel slavery situation that existed between Africans and Europeans. Servitude systems that existed in Africa and in other indigenous communities cannot be compared to racist slave systems in the Western world. And to this day, we attempt to try to see this slavery in the same context. People bring up accounts of biblical slavery or serfdom in Europe, and yes, servitude in Africa, and attempt to paint all these systems with the same brush. However, no other slave system has created the never-ending damage cycle has the Atlantic slave trade. When you take a person's history, land, their culture, their traditions, their spirituality, all the things that make him a human being and to make him a derivative of a human being so low, West Indian poet Derek Walcott has stated his feelings that our potentians for forgetting is a defense mechanism against pain. If we were to take a good hard look at our history, at centuries of victimization, it would be too much for us to handle and we would explode. Well, I say we are exploding anyway. In many cases from bombs that are not even our own. We have begun the long, hard role of rewriting our ancient history, of recovering our old and noble legacy. Let us not stop and get cold feet now when the enemy now appears to take on a slightly darker hue. We must look at the slave trade in its own context, complete with all the historic and psychological peculiarities that has made it the single most damaging and enduring system of exploitation and hatred ever perpetrated in a recent memory of mankind. Until we do, we will not escape its legacy. Give me a call at 215-490-9832. Tell me what you think. If you have opinion on Africans selling Africans into captivity, give me a call. 602-602, good afternoon.
Yes, Brother Oshie.
Hey, Brother Marcus, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great, good brother.
Good.
You know, in the 8th century in Iraq, over there in Iraq, they had a rebellion called the Zanj Rebellion, Z-A-N-J, Zanj. And it were Africans, Africans that were there, you know, enslaved Africans that the Arabs took out of North Africa and took to that part of the world. And there was such a bloody uprising. It says blood flowed in the street when those black people rose up, you know, in the 8th century, called the Zanj Rebellion.
Spell that again, Marcus.
Z-A-N-J. Yeah, Z like zebra. A-N-J. Zanj.
Okay.
Rebellion. So we see these Arabs, you know, they were involved in the slave trade for a very long time. I heard somebody say the other day, he said the Arabs, they were the ones that institutionalized slavery, you know, as an institution. But the European, he came and he internationalized it. He just took what the Arab had in place. Mm-hmm. And just transpose it someplace else. So those Arabs still continue to have a deep hand in Africa. They say their intent is actually, what they want to do is to control all the ports coming out of Africa.
Right.
So if the African have to go anything to do any business, they have to go through pay them. You see, go mm-hmm. through them as like in East Africa, they probably control all those ports. See, everybody want to lock the African off economically. That's the whole game, you know. Do not let this African get an economic toehold.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do not let them control their resources. Do
yep.
not let them have it. Keep them poor. Keep them impoverished.
Mm-hmm.
See?
I don't know if you heard me mention this Caucasian name, Howard Nichols.
Yes.
Yes? Okay,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
See?
Yes. And see? He said it is imperative. Yeah, he said it's a must for them.
That's right.
That's like how it's a must for them. It should be a must for us. So how to break that? Because if we don't break that, our conditions are going to continue to prevail. The 90% of our problem is economics.
Right.
If we can control our economics, we can solve a lot of these problems. But without that economic foothold, without that economic, you know, we keep slipping and sliding and get scattered. You know, so I think that's the focus we should focus. You know, as I said, the other day I was just talking about the penny, the strength of a penny. You know, if you were to take a penny and double it
every day, yeah,
it would be $10 billion.
Yeah.
You know, how can if a penny can do that? Come on, we can solve this problem. I'm telling you, if we really put our heads to the wheel, black people, we must. We ain't got no choice. Solve this economic problem. Solve this psychological problem. And let's move to a better position, you know. Anyway, good brother, keep on keeping on.
Thank you so much for bringing that to our attention. The Zan Rebellion of brothers and sisters who were marched from the east of Africa where they were taken into Iraq, into the middle, so-called Middle East. And they were dogged out and then they rebelled. You know, and so it was put down after so many years. But these brothers and sisters, that's the thing I like to bring to the attention of our people, that we fought. We're not slaves. Slave is somebody or something that submits its will to a master. We resisted. We fought. We fought then and we fight now and we will continue to fight until we are truly liberated. So I thank you, Brother Marcus. All right. Caller. Unknown caller. Is that you, Brother Paul?
Absolutely me, but Baba Ochi. How are you?
I'm doing well, my friend. How are you?
But as I always say, I'm alive, and if I'm alive, I can do better, and better I must do. Let's give thanks for life.
That's right. Because if you are deceased, it's over. You ain't doing nothing.
Absolutely.
You're just decomposing. That's right.
See that, and if no one remembers your name, try twice.
Yep. Yeah.
But we're on this path and this journey to do as much as we can do, and if we can only use our voices to make a change or put an idea, sow a seed, then we've done something.
Right. I mean, you know, that's why I do this program every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, unless there's some extenuating circumstance, whatever that might be, you know, because it is my contribution to the forward flow of our history and to promote our culture and to promote the sovereignty that we must develop. It's important, you know, for me. And so if nobody listens, I'll be here Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern time. Which is about, what, is it 4 o'clock your time now? Or, I mean, 5:30 your time now?
5:30, absolutely.
Yep. 5:35. Yep, 5:35. Yep, your time. So whatever I have to do, I will do, you know, and promote those things that are special to us and that will assist us, you know. Because to me, it's not about... No, let me tell you what it is about. Independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for African people. That's what it is about. And that's what we must have. And whatever way that we can do it to join hands with our brothers and sisters on the continent, throughout the diaspora, in the UK, wherever, we must do. We must do.
That's absolutely on point, Brother Baba Ochi. And I often... get a bit frustrated because from my observations as a people, no matter where we find ourselves, we're complacent in many ways. We're integrally into systems become dependent on, mm-hmm. rely on.
Yeah.
So intertwined within those systems to realize we can earn attention and find our own destiny opposed to in the system, systematic indoctrination that we're part of. You know, yeah, part, you know, words sound power. So if you're on the radio and you're part, I often feel that with this internet radio, even if people aren't listening with their normal ears, your intention, there's something called the 101 monkey theory.
The 101 monkey theory? Okay, go ahead.
To summarize it quickly, what it is that some scientists was observing some monkeys on an island in Japan, somewhere near Japan or something like that. And the monkey dig up some they were eating the yams, and then one of them to take the yam and go and wash it, go down to the beach and wash it and take off the dirt and come back. And the nephew of that, it was a female monkey, and the nephew of that monkey next day copied them. Now,
okay.
Suggesting is on another island locally, when it got to, say, 101, it may have been 102 or whatever the figure was, they recognized that the monkeys on another island, which wasn't directly connected, started to do the same thing. Now, when I read that, it was astounding to me because okay. I've seen this behavior. Even when I was in America, it was amazing. You know, it's certain behaviors and mm-hmm. certain things that you see in Britain, you see them among black people.
Right.
It just really amazed me how I've summarized it. I think personally there's maybe 6 or 7 types groups of people which exist in every culture, and they're the same. They behave the same. I mean, that's just my theory, but the 101 monkey theory suggests that at a certain point, information is somehow transferred.
Mm. It could be transferred because those two islands were separated. So the question becomes, how did the monkeys on this particular island begin to do what the monkeys did on the other island?
So what they were suggesting, that a certain point, that level of consciousness gets transferred. And I think that's absolutely true. Because before I even read it, I actually could see it. You know what I mean? It's just like a secret. People keep a secret. Basically, someone else's ignorance. That's what it really is, and there really is no such thing as a secret. But the reality of it is that consciousness or this transfer of consciousness is connected. That's why I go with that theory. Everything is absolutely connected, and if you don't know yourself, absent of knowledge of yourself. Connected. You're not connected in the way you should be connected. So it starts with the individual. It doesn't start outside the individual. It doesn't start systematic indoctrination, which they tell us it starts from. It doesn't. Mm-hmm. You find some children who are like knowing. They just know.
Right.
No one told them. They just absolutely know. Do you understand what I'm saying to you?
Yeah, yeah.
More connected with themselves than others. And some have to be shown and some have to be nurtured.
Mm-hmm.
But it all comes back down to the same thing, knowing yourself, knowing who you are.
And see,
language.
Right, because once you connect to that, then those things automatically begin to start. Your email, connect the dots, global, you know, begin to connect those dots. And then you begin to, in that connection, there's some memory there, some memory that you never thought. But because now that you're connected, now there's some memory there of tradition, of culture, of language, you know, and you begin to feel that. And you begin to express that. Yeah.
Absolutely. You begin to personify. And that's why I have and the more I say it and the more I think about it, right, the reality becomes apparent. Like, for instance, just imagine, right? Our magnum easy, enslavement, and part of our, it's the language. I mean, this is not our language.
Right, right.
And I don't think we fully understand the fact that we can't speak our language and we don't know what our language is.
Right.
I don't think we fully understand of how our real and full development. I don't think we fully appreciate it.
Right.
This is a language which was imposed on us. It was beaten into us. It was murdered and raped into us. And the sad thing today, we think it's our tongue, and it's not our tongue.
No, this is not our language. That's why I advocate that we should learn an African language. Bibi Atumi, they offer Kiswahili. The brother that's working with us, with the young people, the Bulezi here in Atlanta, he's from Kenya. He's going to teach Kiswahili, you know. To me, it would be great if we had a language. You can still be in the UK. I can still be here in America, but we speak to each other in Kiswahili. Imagine. And we speak to our brothers and sisters on the continent in Kiswahili. They may have a whole bunch, because, you know, there's literally hundreds of languages, not thousands of languages spoken on the continent. But if they embrace, see, you know, they're trying to make folks learn Mandarin Chinese because of the Chinese takeover. Huh?
Power over you. That's why they're doing it. Because they know once you start speaking their tongue, they hold a power over you.
Yeah.
Just like, you're living in America, and those who describe themselves and know that they're African Americans, you're speaking English, is what you're speaking.
Right.
This is the people who created the colony. This is the people who imposed their will on you. And that is what you're speaking. And you're so proud to speak it. And you wonder why you're in the situation you're in.
Yeah. And there's so many of us that, you know, they, they go into all kinds of words. Their flow and their language is just, you know, I don't give a damn about the words of this language. This language, just as Ozzie Davis says, the English language is my enemy. The language is my enemy because I don't have the control of the language, and there's all kinds of different meanings to different words. It is theirs, not ours. And that's why, to me, we need to speak a language that we can connect to.
You know what I think as well, to add to that? Personally, at the moment, I'm at the point where I don't think it matters what language you go and try and learn. But in terms of African languages, I'm talking about. You're a sports person. You've been involved in sports, and you absolutely know that you have to prepare your body if you're going to compete. You know what I mean? And what that means is that you're programming your muscles. You know, you just can't, like, for instance, if you're a boxer or even if you're a footballer, American footballer, you have to prepare the muscles to compete.
Mm-hmm.
Don't.
Right.
Yeah, so, you know, if you go and learn a language, it's almost as if you're preparing. It's an exercise of the brain, and it's right. A completeness. It may not be the exact language, but one thing it will support, which we don't talk about enough, is the dialect. And I don't think we even understand what that means, dialect. And my understanding of it is, for instance, you know, even though we speak a different language, right, detect in my dialect that I'm
right.
a black man.
Exactly. Exactly. It's the same thing. It's the same thing here right. in the States. When you encounter a European, a Caucasian, a white person in the South, his dialect will be different from those white persons in the North.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I don't speak about this enough because the dialect, even though, I mean, you could listen to a French man speaking French, but you detect through the most of dialect he's a black man.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. That's how powerful this thing is.
Right.
So that's why the opposing forces always trying to oppose their language on you, yeah, because mm-hmm. that is a controlling mechanism.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a subliminally mental controlling mechanism,
yeah.
And it gives that other the group who's imposing it the air of superiority, and that's
exactly.
why we come to the conclusion.
Exactly, that's why
many of us wrongly about this superiority thing.
Because I mean. There's a good movie, and although there's parts of it I have some problems with, but Man Friday with Richard Roundtree and Peter O'Toole. It is a takeoff of the Robinson Crusoe story. It's very interesting. Some very deep dynamics. And, of course, one of them is about language. When Peter O'Toole forbid, from speaking his language, you know, and he said, you'll speak English. I'm an Englishman. You'll speak English. Imposing the language on him. You know, so Richard Roundtree was like, okay, I'll learn this. It's very interesting movie. And so, listeners, I don't know if it's on YouTube or if you can catch it on one of the streaming service, Man Friday. It's a movie from I got to say, if not the earliest of 80s, than the late 70s. And it's a very interesting movie. And I think one of the things about the movie that I thought was deeply interesting is that they went to his island where Friday lived. And Peter O'Toole he didn't want to be on the island by himself that he was on. And so he wanted to be a part of what was happening on Friday's island. And Richard Roundtree was telling the story about how this man is, how his mind is, how demented he is, how egotistical he is, how racist he is, you know, and what he made him do, you know. And so when he said, I can be helpful, I could teach the children. And then Richard Roundtree went off. No, you can't. You can't. Don't let this man teach our children, put these evil things into their minds, their beautiful minds. So to make this long story short, they exiled his ass. They sent him back to his island. That's how the movie ends. But to me, you know, even though I gave you that, but watch it anyways, because it's a very deep movie, you know. It's a very deep movie. And in the dynamics of how Europeans impose themselves, particularly on Africans, and how Africans should, how they should deal with these folks and kick these folks out, you know.
You know, Baba Ochi, you know, about it, right? In reality, this is what we've been through and what we've experienced, whether you person sees it good or bad, I think we become the most important people on the planet. I think that's another thing we fail to recognize. We're that because we were the first on the planet, because we come from the most expensive real estate on the planet, and as you rightfully always says, everybody wants it, right? Yep. So that makes us the most important people on the planet, and I don't, and they know it, but we don't.
Right.
Just don't know.
I agree.
Most important people on the planet, right? That realize, you know, when we, I constantly, this is my view, my summarization from my observation. We constantly talk about unity, right? And I think personally, we are more unified than we recognize, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But if you don't know yourself, if you don't understand who you are, you're not going to recognize that unity. You're not going to recognize where you're unified. You're not going to see it. You're not right. going to understand it, and you're not going to apply. You're just, you know, like some of our callers, we just constantly talk about the non-progressive things and concentrate on the things which keep us back, because you don't recognize the importance in yourself. You don't recognize the importance in what you do, who you are, or what you become. You don't see it because you don't really know yourself, mm-hmm. who you are. You don't really even know your purpose.
Right.
Purpose is your job title. You think your purpose is your hood or your group. No, that it's more divine than that. It's greater than that. Mm-hmm. If you don't recognize it, if you don't know yourself, it comes back to the same point every time. They're always going to be that other thing which they want you to be in their systematic indoctrination, in their system.
See, you know, the reason why a lot of us don't know ourselves is because we continue to listen to Europeans, because we're trained in their academy, and we're afraid to step outside of that. So, and we also have been trained to reject those who bring knowledge to us.
We undermine.
Yes. See, and so we continue to embrace
it. The black man is the most undermined planet. I say that with no apology, because this is another thing we don't want to admit to. We just do not want to admit to it. We are the most undermined. If you look at the TV, the television, films, adverts, literature, yeah, you can go on and on and on. You know, when I went to university, right, not one book to study which represented a black man, not one book on the curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
This is, yeah. And we still accept this nonsense.
Yeah.
We still accept this nonsense, you know, because of the fear. It's the fear of you waking up to your reality, and it's the fear of you knowing who you really are, your true purpose on this earth. And what is that? It's the true purpose on this earth is to rule over this earth and control this earth. And that sounds scary to most.
Yes, it does.
That you have to.
Because, see, to Caucasians, the fear is that we will do to them what they have done to us. You know,
our purpose is to save the earth. You know, all we talk about, I often think, yeah. If we sit back and allow these narcissistic, sociopathic psychopaths to control, right, there's going to be no earth. There's going to be nothing for us to live for.
That's
look
right.
how they behave.
You're right.
So all that we say, when we talk about economics, we talk social, all these things we talk about, we can't practice them if we can't save the earth, if we have no control over the land. You can't practice these things.
That's right. And that's the purpose.
All ideologies.
To control.
Economics is an ideology. It's just an ideology, just like religion.
Mm-hmm.
Look at it. I tried to read it. It's an ideology. It's going to save you. If you don't know yourself, if you don't have control over the land, economics won't save you. You know, this is why they've ruthlessly got into place. Look at the creation of America. They killed the native people.
Yeah.
Through reservations.
And they wanted you to think. They wanted you to think that it was a lot of barren land, just a few so-called tribes here or there. That they negotiated with. No, there was millions of humans on the land here when the European came. And his forward Western march, his manifest destiny, his, what is that? The manifest destiny and the white man's burden that he had to civilize these people. Civilize them meant that I had to exterminate them. That's why
genocide.
Did you check out
Australia, Canada? Everywhere he's been, that's what he's.
Yes.
It's not economics he brought. He didn't bring no economics.
No.
He brought mass murder, genocide, rape, torture.
Yes.
Now today in 2021, he wants us to pretend that he didn't do that.
Right.
You did do it. You did do it. We all know you did it. What you did.
Right.
So we're not going to get fooled up by your socialization and all these ideologies you wrote in your book. We know what you did.
That's why there's such a big fight. That's why it's such a big fight of in critical race theory. What critical race theory is examining the history of the world and looking at it through your own eyes. And when you look at it through your own eyes, this European is the devil. He is. But yet and still, when you look at here in America, I don't know if you're following this bullshit that's happening here. We're talking about critical race theory and all these Caucasians and even some Negroes are talking about, you know, we must not let critical race theory be. No, we must teach history the way that it is should be taught. And objectively and realistically and historically. And we must get different views because, number one, we know y'all as some liars.
And the truth is our greatest weapon.
Exactly. The truth is our greatest
and
weapon.
The truth is there. You cannot beat the truth.
No.
And that's what they're afraid of. You see, no, you asked me if I'm following it. I was first alerted to it on Time for Awakening, to be honest with you, yeah? You know, you posed the question. Looking into it, but you know what? You know, all honesty, this is my own personal feelings. No. You know, I don't mean any offense to anybody. But I think these things are just diversions. They're just diversions because the reality, we want the land. You have to get the land back.
Yeah.
You know, all these nonsense. These diversions are nonsense.
Yeah.
You don't want to think like that because that really means that we've got some work to do. And that work might mean we might lose our lives. And there's a great majority of us are too cowards to come to that realization.
Yeah.
You know, at the moment, one of my greatest, you know, the people I hear on the radio is this guy who talks about addicted to white. He's the only one who seems to me to talk the absolute truth.
Yeah.
He says, unfortunately, majority of us are cowards. And that is the truth. That is the whole truth.
Yeah.
We talk every other diversion, talk every other bullcrap. Don't want to talk what we have to really do. This white man ain't going to give up one inch. What kind of marching up and down the streets, dancing in the park, singing, shuffling yourself as though, no matter what.
No.
Have to stand up and be men and be counted. And that is the reality of our situation. There's none other for me.
Yeah,
none other. Is it just a total waste of time? I'm fed up with this verbal masturbation which goes on. I'm sick to the stomach of it. Because at the end of the day, we're not progressing. I've been into certain areas in my locality. Purely Asians, all the businesses, all the properties, purely. And I'm saying to myself,
same thing here. The same thing here in the United States. It's probably the same thing on the continent. Hey, man, if African people do not wake the hell up, close ranks, pull resources, and do for themselves, take their land back, get rid of the damn Chinese, the Arabs, the Indians, the Caucasians, and control your land, control your resources. I read this all the time, Paul, you know, not all the time, but there's certain things that I do read consistently because they're important to me for our people to understand. And this one is Ezra Erohone, the psyche, the sovereign psyche, Brother Erohone. He says, there is no other historical instance of a formerly enslaved people who valued integration with their former captors to the point where they completely abandoned the superior wealth of their own homeland. That's a hell of a quote, man. That's a serious-ass quote.
That's a painful truth.
It's a painful truth.
Very painful truth.
Yes, it is. And that's what we must understand, that we have abandoned. We have bought into the crackers mindset, hook, line, and sinker. And we believe that the only true reality should be about being with them, about sharing what they have, about, you know, and yet we give up so much of who we are. In fact, we don't even know who we are because we want to be like them. We want to share in what they have. We want a piece of this nasty ass pie that they created. You know? Oh, that's,
I know time is short, so I'll just say this, You know, the reality of it is, right, continue with this the verbal masturbation and the brick for as long as it needs to go on. But the reality of it is we can't do nothing without the land, right? And no one gave them the right of the land. Nobody. They gave themselves it. It's about time now. And I know this is frightening to them. They don't want to hear this. This is some frightening talk to them because they have been tricking us and fooling us, hoodwinking us and bamboozling us with their nonsense and their bullcrap, their indoctrination. And it's time to stand up. We got to do it. Because if people don't recognize that after this crazy time when they want to stick toxins in your arm.
Yeah.
That's going to help you. If we don't realize what's going on now, it's just too late for them.
Yeah. Man, I tell you, I don't know if you heard a good program last night on Brother Elliot and Brother Richard's program, Time for an Awakening, with Professor Johnson. I can't remember the sister's name, but they talked about the vaccines and so forth. And I tell you, man, I'm glad I did not go that way. And I'm glad from this platform, I encouraged our people to use their minds.
They're not vaccines. It's an mRNA. It's a gene manipulation. They're using biological warfare. Right, that's what they're using. These are not vaccines in the idea of their vaccines. And I don't have to be an expert to know this. I can read, and I've got a good logical brain. This is something very new, which they are experimenting in. If you took it, you've been a guinea pig.
Right.
You have been a guinea pig.
Because it's not been approved. It has not been approved. It hasn't gone through the rigors of the scientific inquiry as all other things have. They streamlined it. They created the truth. They streamlined it. And just gave it to the people. You know, and impose it. And hold on. They have never talked about any alternatives to deal with this. They have never talked about nutrition.
There's never supposed to be an alternative.
Yeah.
Look, I just want to make this point. Yeah. You know, we're, you know, the way I'm looking at it, they said this thing came out of China. We know that's not true now. We, you know, whatever bullcrap they've said, the propaganda, we know that's not true. This came out of Fort Detrick.
Fort Detrick, Maryland,
which is a center set up for biological warfare.
Right, because that's where the AIDS virus came out of. Fort Detrick, Maryland.
So I want you in America to know that you in America are responsible for this. You, the people, your government, those who Fauci, Bill Gates, Melinda, we know who done it. We know. We're not that stupid. So when people are talking about foreigners coming in, we know that it's come out of America. And most from wrapping the indigenous people up in smallpox, which is the first biological attack on people, to this. It's been going on for a long time. So we're not fooled like that anymore. So, you know, you in America hold a massive responsibility to stand up to these psychopaths and change this nonsense.
I hear you. You know, I got to go. I got to go, Paul. I appreciate you, brother. Thank you, my
friend.
Thank
you for giving me the time.
Always, Paul. You take care. Peace to you. Oh, man, I'm way past. But listen, I appreciate it much. I appreciate all those who call and listen. I appreciate all who just listen. Somebody who even calls and just to listen. Whatever the case may be, I'm thankful. I appreciate it. I'll be here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday trying to do the best that I can to put something on the minds of our people to get us to think outside of those imposed boundaries that Europeans have placed upon us. To release that vice grip that they have on our minds. Brothers and sisters, we end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure in hell don't want to pay for. brothers and sisters. You have a blessed and wonderful day. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Bivahodie. Bivahodie means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. You have a blessed day. Hope to see you. Hope to be hope you'll be hearing from me on Wednesday. Peace, family.